You're listening to the From the Hack Curling Podcast, part of the Curling News and Sports Illustrated Partnership. Hi, everyone. My name is Frank Rock, and welcome to the From the Hack Curling Podcast and our 2024 World Women's Curling Championship Preview. Our guests for the preview are Alina Petz of Switzerland, Rachel Holman of Team Canada, Anna Hasselberg of Team Sweden, Tabitha Peterson of the USA, Jen Dodds of Scotland, and Jess Smith of Team New Zealand. Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining me this week. Once again, my name is Frank Rock. My first guest on this year's Women's Worlds Preview is Alina Petz, third and last rock thrower for Team Tirrenzoni of Switzerland, who have won the past four World Championships. Petz is known as one of the most clutch players in recent curling history and has won six career World Women's Championships. Alina, your team goes into the World Championships in Sydney, having won 35 straight games at the Women's Worlds, last losing in draw 13 of the 2021 event in Calgary. Now, the World Championships are a long and hard event. How have you maintained your focus and consistency to win that many games in a row over the past three editions of the event?
Well, I think obviously we played very well in most of those games, but I think the key at the Worlds is to just take game by game, day by day, because you have so many games, as you said, you just need to focus on what's ahead of us and not what happened. Doesn't matter if it's a win or a loss, you just have to forget about it pretty quick, and I think that's the key for the success, I think.
Your team had a solid season, Alina, qualifying for the playoffs in all 12 events and winning five titles. How satisfied are you with your season so far?
Very much, actually. I mean, we brought in a new player with Selena, and she's doing great so far. It's always a challenge when you put in a new player, but she managed it very well. And we played well. I think we still have a potential to play a little better than we did the whole season. But I think overall we are happy with the progress we're making. I think we're still improving, and that's a good sign.
Tell me about winning your first European Championship back in November, Alina. It must have felt nice to get that first one.
Yeah, definitely. It's always tough to win Europeans, I felt. Like, also Worlds, of course, but the Europeans are in end of November, and we usually come back from an intense weeks after the two slams. So we go into the Europeans without any big rest. And I think that makes it even tougher. And of course, we're happy to finally tick that off the list. Yeah.
This is third straight season that you've added at least one new player on the team, Alina. It often takes a year or two for new lineups to adjust to each other. How do you explain the fact that Team Tirrenzoni can seemingly change a lineup and not miss a step?
Well, I think we always chose great players. That's why. I mean, Breyer last year, she played on a big level already, which helped us like bringing her in. And it's the same for Selena. I mean, she played the Grand Slams before she was in our team. And obviously playing on the big stage with those Grand Slams, playing in front of a crowd, playing on arena ice, that helps a lot for events like European and Worlds. I mean, she will for sure be a little more nervous stepping on the ice on Saturday, but we try to help her as good as possible. And she will not be the only one being excited on Saturday. It's the same for me still, same for Savannah, and of course for Carol as well. So playing a world championship is always special.
What is it about you and Savannah that makes you work so well on the ice together, Alina?
Well, that's a good question. I think we grow with each other the last couple of years since we play with each other. And I think she's a great strategist. She's actually the best strategist in women's curling, I think. And that makes it easier for us because she knows exactly how to skip our team no matter how we play. If we have let's say not a good day, she's just skipping the game that we still have a chance to win it. And I just try to execute as good as I can. And of course it gives me confidence when I have a skip like Sylvana, and I think it's vice versa. She's happy to have me as a last rock thrower, and we know exactly what he have from the other person. Yeah.
Now, this will mark the third time that Team Tirrenzoni has competed at a World Championship in Canada during this streak. Tell me about competing in Canada, where the crowds are usually a little bigger and often a little noisier than you might get in other countries. Not counting, of course, the year that you played in the Calgary bubble where you were competing in front of cardboard cutouts.
Well, it's got to be great, I'm sure. We love being in Canada. We love playing in front of a big crowd. And yeah, it's going to be noisier than it is on like when we play in Europe. But yeah, we love it. We love the Canadian crowd. It's a very fair crowd. It's a loud crowd. And we can't wait for it.
And finally, Alina, I know that you want to win each event that you compete in, especially at a Women's Worlds, but I'm curious to know what it would mean for you from a historical perspective, I guess, or what you might look back on when your career is over. Should your team win this year at the Worlds and become the first team, men or women's team, to win 5 straight World Championships?
Yeah, I think, you know, we for sure can win the Worlds a 5th time, but I think like at least 6 or 7 other teams playing the World Championship can do that. So it's going to be a tough field. And I mean, we try to take it game by game. It's going to be tough for sure. And like we will lose a game at some point. So we have to be prepared for that. I don't expect us to win out this Worlds, but it's possible, but we don't know. And we will just try to be the team here in Sony. We are all season. And I think if we do that, if we play on our potential, we will have good chances to win every game.
My next guest this week is Rachel Homan, who will represent Canada fresh off her 4th career Scotties title. Team Homan goes into the World Championships in Sydney on a roll. They have lost only 5 games all season, taking home 6 titles, including 2 slams, and going undefeated at the Scotties in Calgary. I interviewed Rachel a few days after the Scotties. Both of our schedules were jammed, and we connected while Rachel was in transit. There were some audio issues, but in consultation with Team Homan's management, the decision was made to include the interview in our preview of the Women's Worlds. Rachel, you won a 4th Scotties a few weeks ago in Calgary. I'm sure you were happy for yourself and the whole team, but it must have been especially nice to see Tracy Fleury win her first.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, every Scotties win is unique and has its own story. And it was just so exciting to be in the house with Tracy. And I just saw the look on her face when she realized we won. It's something I'll never forget.
When Joanne Courtney decided to step away from competitive curling, Rachel, you could have probably approached just about any player in the country to join your team. What made Tracy Fleury such a good fit for Team Homan?
Yeah, I think I've known Tracy a long time. We played against each other forever, her being Northern Ontario, us being Southern Ontario, and just competing against each other, kind of knowing how she plays the game. She was always our toughest competitor, always so talented and put lots in the game. Her whole family's just huge into curling and so similar to our families and just a big support system. She's a fierce competitor on the ice and just a ton of positivity and a lot of fun on and off the ice. So when we heard that she was potentially looking for a team, we were, shocked because we didn't think that the number one team in Canada at the time would be changing up their team, but luck had it for us that they were, and we thought we'd give it a try. Obviously, you never know what positions people are going to play, but when you have a lot of talent on your team, you figure out where the pieces can fit and make it work.
Your team seemed to be a little bit snake-bitten at the Scotties over the past few years, Rachel, losing 3 finals since your last win in 2017. Was it starting to gnaw at you a little bit, or were you confident it was just a matter of time?
No, I think I was pretty proud with how we did. 2 of them, I was pregnant. One of them, like, due any day. So I thought what we were able to accomplish, I mean, one was in the middle of a pandemic with no practice ice, just circumstances. I mean, obviously there are also other talented, amazing teams, and we lost Anderson, who is a phenomenal team and a great representative for Canada. Not trying to diminish anyone else's accomplishments, but for us it was timing and circumstances, and we weren't really able to put everything we could into the game the way we know we could, and that just happens with life and as you grow up and grow families and teammates changing positions, and you're kind of learning that communication and how everyone works in a team, and some other teams may be in full form and have been together for years. So I think we're really proud of how we did, and obviously it took us a while to win that final, but it didn't feel snake bitten by any means. It was we're proud of our accomplishments, and I mean every event and every finish that you have, you're going to learn something from and grow from it and take that experience, and you enjoy all the experiences along the way, wins or losses, and then figure out what you need to do to set your goals to achieve that final and win it this time. And just so proud of my team for the way they played all week and then into playoffs. We just really never wavered.
Your team has been ridiculously good this season, Rachel. You've won 6 of 8 events, 2 slams, the points bet, and now the Scotties. You've only lost 5 games all season, 2 of which were in the same event. Can you point to some key factors that have allowed the team to go on such a run this season?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any secrets here. We're putting in the work, putting in the time. I know everybody is. But we've just found a way to make all the pieces of our team connect and click, and it's just going really well for us.
As I mentioned a few moments ago, Rachel, you last competed at a World Championship in 2017. Now, you've experienced a lot since then. You've had 3 children. You're a 2-time Olympian. You've played in 4 Scotties finals since then. Has your perspective on curling changed in that span? I know you still want to win every game and event you compete in, but I wonder if the wins and losses are less all-consuming now than they may have been earlier in your career.
Yeah, I think I've always had that perspective of, you know, wins or losses, you're always learning from it, and you're going to have those highs and lows, and that's just a part of sport, and you're going to have bad days, and you're going to have, you know, the best days of your life, and just being able to share that as our team and our family grows and adds more people to the mix. It's just been a lot of fun to experience, and yeah, I think every event we have together, we try and enjoy it as much as possible. You never know when it's going to be a lost one.
Yeah, as quick as your team and the family grows, at some point you're going to need a bigger suite when you go to the Scotties.
Yeah. Thankfully, we had a fairly big suite in Calgary this past weekend.
The last time you played in a World Championship in Canada, Rachel, was in 2014, also on East Coast in St. John, New Brunswick, where you lost only twice, both against Binya Felcher of Switzerland on your way to a silver medal. Now, the depth of the women's game has significantly evolved since then. Has it forced you to adapt your physical, technical, and mental training to keep up and stay amongst that top group of teams capable of winning the big events?
Yeah, I think it was definitely a big wake-up call for Canada that we had to put in more work, more time together. Those teams that we're competing against are together almost every day. And it's just not the case in Canada. The geography and the landscape of Canada is so big. And we have so much talent, but we're all pretty spread out in Canada. So it makes it more challenging to get the training that you need. And so we kind of adapted our schedule and our events to make sure that we get the maximum amount of time together that we can, and using technology to be able to keep in touch with what we're working on and kind of share and have some sort of like Zoom practices, if you will. Obviously not quite to that extent, but being able to keep in touch and share the technology piece with each other kind of helps you in lieu of in-person training camps kind of keep up that way.
Now, Rachel, your team always seems to take flak, regardless of how successful you are and no matter how much you try to engage with fans in person and on social media. How difficult is it to strike a proper balance in this day and age when there's so much demand from you and from the team, and having to balance that with everything else that's going on in your lives?
Yeah, I guess I try and, we try and be as transparent as we can be with our lives, and we share a lot of content on social media and kind of help kind of give people a little bit of insight as to the amount of fun we have off the ice and as a team. And yeah, obviously people are going to like you, not like you on social media and on the internet, and, you know, have their own conclusions about who you are based on the amount of FaceTime we have on air with the Scotties and through the slams. I mean, our faces are there for 2.5 to 3.5 hours. And yeah, I think we try and be as transparent as we can be on social media. Obviously have a little bit of privacy with our families. And yeah, I mean, we just try not to read into people's opinions, because you're going to have people that like you, you're going to have people that don't like you. But I think for us, like, we know that we're staying true to ourselves all the time, and that we're having a blast as a team and supporting each other and trying to build each other up and then growing our families at the same time. It feels really special to be able to do that as our families grow, to still be able to compete. There's not many sports that you're able to do that. That's been kind of the coolest thing for us to experience.
Not to mention the fact that all these years later, and people are still complaining about the fact that you and the team don't smile enough during a game, which I honestly believe is ridiculous, given the focus that is needed to compete at the highest levels of curling.
Yeah, I think that's a tough one with women's sports. I mean, there's not too many sports where you can see everyone's face, like, without a cage being in front of it, and so people judge you for being ultra focused. Obviously, it's like a chess match on ice for 3 hours, and you can't really waver in your focus and your ability to concentrate on a million different things at once. And so it's tough, because I don't think, I mean, one, you'd never hear that in the Mets game, and two, you wouldn't see anybody really with laser focus, but also smiling and joking around. I mean, there's a time and place for that, and when they cut to commercials and when there's lulls in the game, like, we have a ton of fun and we joke around lots when it's appropriate, but when the game's on and there's a lot on the line and everyone's hopes and dreams, it's kind of a funny comment about smiling is not something that you really think about in any other sport, so it's a tough one. Yeah, it doesn't really make a lot of sense to us, but we have fun with it. We know that we have a blast on and off the ice, so we know that we're just kind of doing our thing, and whatever comes across on TV, I mean, we don't really have control over the product that they see.
The 2024 World Championships will be the first time that you wear the maple leaf since your two Olympic appearances, Rachel. How excited are you about putting that maple leaf back on and striving to win the first Women's Worlds for Canada since 2018?
Yeah, I mean, we're beyond excited. The opportunity to go back and put that maple leaf on our back and compete in Canada, it just couldn't be any better. We're so excited to get started. And we know that we've put in the work, and we feel ready to be able to represent Canada with all we have, and we just hope that we can, at the end of the week, bring back a medal for Canada.
And finally, Rachel, there was a time when Canadian teams that didn't know their opponents very well when they arrived at a world championship. Does it even out the field now that most of the top international teams regularly face each other at slams and some of the larger tour events?
Yeah, I mean, I think it makes the international teams better to be able to play all our top teams five times in the year. And I think it makes us better as Canadians to compete against the top of the world. And I think it just makes for continued better curling, great viewership. And I think it's great to be able to play those teams and, you know, grow the game, and everyone keeps pushing their game more and more. And I think it's great for the sport.
My next guest is two-time Olympic medalist Anna Hasselberg of Sweden. Her team has won almost every title in women's curling except a world championship. Hasselberg and her teammates will look to change that in Sydney. Anna, you've had a good season, winning three events and qualifying in all of the slams, although you are winless in the slams this season. How would you describe the season for Team Hasselberg so far?
I think that we have been having a great season. We definitely is playing very well, but as you said, we are missing some of the top results. We haven't won a slam. We haven't not been in a slam final, and just a couple of semi-final finishes. So I think we are still looking for that really break through in the season. But we this year we are still in the build up in a bigger plan that we are having towards the Olympics. So I'm feeling very good where we at, and I'm really trusting the process, and we're having a lot of fun, and I think we're developing through the events and through the games we're playing. So happy with that, and I'm happy with the way we're playing still.
You lost the European qualifier to Team Vrano this year, consisting of a best-of-seven series between the two teams on who would represent Sweden at the Europeans. How strange is it, Anna, to play six or seven games back-to-back against the same team when typically in big events like the Worlds or the Europeans, you're playing 10 to 12 different teams in that event?
Yeah, it definitely is different. We've done it many times. This was the first time we lost the qualifier, but it gets another feeling because you go step out there on the ice all the time, and the team that is behind will always throw everything they have at you. They have nothing to lose, and the team that is ahead has more to lose. It's definitely a strange feeling, but we are no strangers of playing each other a lot of times. I think we played Team Vrano 14 times this season. We only lost those four games at the European qualifier. So I think we took the loss the best way possible. And we have built the team from that. And it's different, but it's a good way to qualify you for the Europeans, I think, still, when we have two close team like we do have, and it's such a great opponent in Team Vrano.
Despite all of your team's success in big events such as the Olympics, the Europeans, and the Slams, Anna, you have yet to win a world championship. Have you changed your approach in preparing and competing at the Worlds in an effort to get over that hump and win a first world championship?
No, I think with the world championships, I think you can never expect the wins. Even though we won the Olympics, we won the Europeans and many slams, as you said, you can never go into an event and say, like, just because we won all these things, we should automatically be winning the Worlds. I think that for a lot of years at the Worlds, I don't think we have been the strongest favorite to win it, and we haven't won it. So, and there's no different this year. I think, as I said, we're trusting the process, and there will be three teams at the Worlds ranking higher than us, three teams that have had phenomenal seasons. And we know that we can beat anyone, but we are definitely not the favorites to win this year either. But I know if we trust the process, we can be there, and we can definitely win it, and hopefully we will be the favorites going in next year.
Tell me about playing at a world championship in Canada, Anna, where the arena is usually full and the crowd is really into it. I know I remember back in North Bay in 2018 when you reached the final versus Team Jones and the place was absolutely rocking. Does that become distracting when you're not used to it, or does it give you extra energy and motivation?
No, it's been the big goal for the whole season. Even losing the Europeans, I think we felt so much more eager that the World Championships in Canada was going to be ours. Like, it's playing on the East Coast has always been amazing. The fans are fantastic, and it's such a cool experience. And even though we lost the final in 2018 there in North Bay, I still cherish the atmosphere and the way the Worlds were going. Like, it was an amazing. So we're looking forward to that a lot.
Your first round game at the Worlds in Sydney is against Canada's team Holman. Anna, do you prefer playing another top team in your first game, or would you prefer playing a game against a less experienced team, which might give you a chance to get a feel for the ice and a better feel for the venue before playing other top teams?
Actually, I haven't thought about it that much. I think it's pretty good to have Team Holman in first game. Hopefully, there will be a lot of crowd in the building, and will be a cool experience. And hopefully, just to bring your A game and have the crowd to cheer on some good shots. Maybe we could have a clap somewhere, even though we're playing Canada. But no, I haven't thought about that too much. You have to play them all. And as you said, there are no easy teams this year, and there's so many good women's team right now, and we have all the top teams in the world playing the Worlds as it should be. So I don't mind playing them whenever, because you gotta play them all.
And finally, Anna, there's been a few additions to the team over the past couple of seasons, as several members of the team have had children. How has becoming a mom changed your perspective when it comes to curling?
No, definitely it has changed. Like, curling is definitely not the number one priority, and it's so different from when we put this team together. It was just the four of us traveling, and the only thing we left back home was some husbands or boyfriends. But no, it's different, and it's definitely challenging. But I would take those challenges any day, because it's life, and it's amazing that you can have both things. And it's a chaos, but it's an amazing chaos, and it's our chaos, and we love it.
My next guest is Tabitha Peterson of the U.S., who is headed to a 7th World Championship. Team Peterson won bronze at the 2021 Worlds and will look to return to the podium in 2024 in Sydney, Nova Scotia. Tabitha, you played Team Anderson in your first game at the U.S. Nationals and lost that game. Sometimes a loss in a big event is a good thing because, as Glenn Howard once told me, if you're going to have a rough game, it's best to get it out of your system early on in the event. Did the early loss at Nationals perhaps get your team even more zoned in for the rest of the week?
Yeah, I think it's probably a combination of everything you said. We're always in our first game or two trying to figure out the ice, as is every team, and they just figured it out a little quicker than we did. And we tried to battle back, but they just kind of kept the pedal on the gas, so we didn't win that one. But we knew that it was going to be a long, hard week, and we had to stay focused for every game. So yeah, it was meant to be, I guess, and we learned a lot from that game.
Steals played a big role in both of your playoff wins, Tabitha. You stole 3 consecutive ends in the 1-2 game and then stole 4 points in the 6th end of the championship final to take a 7-2 lead and gain firm control of the final game. Was it a case of you putting as much pressure as possible on Team Anderson when they had the hammer? Was that part of the strategy for your team heading into those 2 games?
Yeah, I think that's part of the strategy. We were noticing a trend for us personally that week. We were kind of struggling in the first end. So we tried to keep the first 1 end or 2 end a little more open, just so that we could get a feel for the ice and map the sheet and stuff like that. But then after that, when we felt comfortable, is when we started to kind of really put pressure on teams and mostly kind of taking advantage and capitalizing when they missed and stuff, or a half shot here and there. It's like, okay, here's our moment. Let's really get this one in a good spot type of thing. So yeah. And my team, we do have a capability of kind of playing those draws and finesse shots. And so we're not afraid to have it be junky with lots of rocks in play. And we got a bunch of steals out of it. So.
Speaking of ice conditions, Tabitha, I have to ask you about playing the national championship in a shopping center. Were ice conditions consistent during the week, and how different of an environment was that to play in?
Yeah, it was definitely a unique venue. It was literally in the middle of a mall. I think people have compared it to the Edmonton Mall when they've hosted championships there. But yeah, there were you could watch on the main level. There was a second level and a third level that fans could watch from. So it was literally smack dab in the middle, which was very interesting. But yeah, I do think the ice makers kind of struggled with being able to regulate things like the temperature and everything. But the ice did just get gradually better and better as the week went on, which was awesome. It was the ice was really good for the playoffs. It was particularly warm in there as well. Like, I don't know exactly what it was, but I was hot, which I'm never hot. Usually I'm bundled up in 4 layers with a heated vest, and I just had my jacket on. So, and everyone else is wearing t-shirts. So it was very, very warm out there, but definitely a unique venue. I think the fans really, really enjoyed it. It was really cool for them between draws to just walk around, go shopping, grab a bite to eat. And, I think just random people passing through the mall, getting a look at curling, is good exposure to the sport as well.
The win at the U.S. Nationals put an exclamation point on what seemed, at least from the outside looking in, to be an uneven season for your team. How would you summarize your team's current season?
Yeah, I guess you could say that. We didn't have as much success as we would have liked on the slam circuit. And I think, it's always hard putting together a season when you're always on the cusp of getting into slams and stuff. And we mostly have been, but if you don't do well at them, you don't get points. And so we kind of have to evaluate how we want to do next season, I guess you could say, in terms of adding some other tour events that aren't slams. just in case you don't qualify in them. It's kind of an all or nothing. But yeah, I mean, we qualified in one, we lost in a tiebreaker in another one. So it could have easily been two. But overall, it's, you know, we're looking forward to the Nationals was kind of the goal, right? And hopefully we're peaking at the right time here to really make a good showing at the Worlds, hopefully get on the medal stand.
Your team always seems to do well when wearing the red, white, and blue at the international competitions. Tabitha, I'm sure it never gets old representing your country at major events like a World Championship.
Oh, yeah, for sure. There's something special about it, for sure. And we, you know, never take it for granted. So we try to, you know, soak it all in every game, every chance we get.
This is your second season with Corey Thiessy in the third position on your team, Tabitha, and it can occasionally take a little bit of time for a new player to gel with the team. How has your partnership evolved in the back end of that team in your second year together?
Yeah, like you said, those relationships kind of do take time, and trying to figure out how each teammate kind of wants to hear feedback or how they react to feedback, or, you know, there's a million different things, and it all comes down to kind of just getting to know. And so especially as the back end, Corey and I have to work well together in terms of the shot selection and talking about ice and the broom and everything like that. So yeah, we've worked really hard on it. She's super easygoing, and so, you know, it wasn't that difficult. We get along great. You know, of course, we have a sports psychologist, so we work with her kind of as a whole team, and front end, back end, and individual, to kind of just, you know, hone in on little details that can make a difference in the long run or make a difference in big games.
The World Championship can be a grueling event, as you know, Tabitha, given that it consists of a full round robin of 12 games. This will be your seventh Worlds, and I'm wondering if you've reached a point where you're comfortable navigating not only the competition, but also the off-ice events, media, and other distractions that come with being at a World Championship.
Yeah, you're right. It is an extremely long week, especially like 10 end games. And, you know, we have like 4 2-game days back to, you know, you're playing at 9 and 2 or 2 and 7. Like it can be grueling. It's definitely intense, but, you know, obviously every team is in the same boat as you. So yeah, just trying to figure out how to rest and recover quickly, and what every teammate needs is maybe different in terms of how they need to kind of recharge and refresh, whether it's, you know, sitting in the room by yourself and relaxing, or if it's like going for a walk outside, getting fresh air, or go shopping, you know, it just depends. So we definitely know that it's going to be a long week. And so, yes, we've been in this position many times before, so we know exactly what to expect. So it shouldn't be a problem.
Tell me a little bit about playing a World Championship in Canada, Tabitha. Given the number of fans in the stands throughout the week, it certainly has to feel like a different environment compared to most of the other events you'll play during a season.
Yeah, no, I've been to, I don't even know, maybe two, I don't know, Canadian World Championships, and yes, they are so much fun. So that is definitely one of the things I'm looking for. After we won, that's literally the first thing I said. I'm like, I'm so excited to go to a Worlds in Canada again. And, you know, the last one that we were competing in was in the bubble, so that one doesn't really count because there are no fans. But yeah, they do such a great job. They draw the crowd, which is amazing. It's awesome to play under the big lights with the big crowds. And, you know, there's just the patch, and there's just lots you can do as a fan. And yeah, I can't say enough. We're really looking forward to it.
And finally, Tabitha, last year's Worlds were a bit of a roller coaster for your team. You won 3 straight games early on, but then lost 3 in a row, ultimately finishing with a 6-6 record. What will be the keys for your team if you want to improve on last year's performance and make your way back to the World Championship podium?
Yeah, we came close last year. As a team, we played really, really well. We lost some really close games that could have gone the other way for us. So yeah, we think that we have what it takes. It's just kind of trying to get all 4 players to be firing on all cylinders kind of at the same time, just get in a groove and just have some good battles out there. There's a ton of really good teams, so we do have to bring our best. And we've been working on some things from last year that we'll take into this year's World Championships. So, you know, we're excited.
My next guest is 2022 Olympic gold medalist Jen Dodds of Scotland, who has returned to women's play full-time this season after a brief hiatus and will play third for Scotland's Team Morrison, who will look to earn a first podium finish for Scotland in 7 years at the Women's Worlds. Jen, last year you served mostly as the alternate for Team Morrison. Was that your way of taking a break from full-time play while remaining involved? I know that the Olympic season and everything that happened after you won gold in Beijing were exciting but exhausting.
Yeah, sort of coming into last season, I kind of decided with the coaches that I'd take a wee bit step back from women's because after the Olympics, obviously doing mixed doubles and women's, after that, I was pretty burnt out. And even sort of coming into the summer and returning at the start of the season, I was still not fully back to where I was. So we agreed for me just to kind of concentrate on mixed doubles a wee bit, kind of just get back into it and sort of enjoying it. And then the opportunity to go as alternate for Rebecca's team came up, and I was like, yeah, I'd love to, if I can help in any way and sort of share my experiences and stuff, absolutely. And I got to play at the Worlds last year as well, which was quite nice as well. I hadn't played since the Calgary bubble in 2021. Feels such a long time ago now. It was nice to get back. And then obviously this year they asked me to play in the five-man team. So yeah, I feel like I'm sort of fully back into women's now.
Quite the setup for Team Morrison last season, having an Olympic champion preparing the fifth and snacks for the team.
I think they enjoyed that, yeah. I felt like I did a good job with the cutting of the apples and peeling of the oranges.
You returned to full-time play as the third on Team Morrison this season, Jen. It had been a few years since you played the third position. How has that transition gone so far?
Yeah, so I think the last time I played third was maybe in like 2018, maybe 2019. It's not too unfamiliar for me. And as obviously at second and third, you've probably got similar shots. I think now with obviously the new centre line rule with in play, I would say the thirds are probably hitting a lot more as well. So, it's actually been quite an easy transition for me, and I've really been enjoying it. But obviously, I'm still doing a lot of sweeping. So obviously, I kind of had a wee bit of a break last year with mixed doubles for the sweeping. So I've really been focusing on sort of getting the sweeping back to where it was, because I don't go in the head. Even though I play third, I don't go in the head. Getting those sweeps, because you're sweeping six zones again, it can build up on your body anyway.
There are three members of the team, Jen, that have skipped at the elite level before. How do you navigate that as a team to ensure that not too much information is exchanged and that clock management does not become an issue?
Yeah, I think it's a good thing. Like, we all have that sort of really good tactical knowledge and we can all have our input, but yeah, as you said, you can't talk too much, obviously, especially at like European and World Championships, because obviously you get down on time pretty quick. So we've actually kind of had to put processes in place for certain shots and stuff like that, just to make sure we have enough time for Rebecca at the end, because obviously her shots are probably like the ones that affect the game the most, so we don't want her rushing those. So we just make sure we have processes in place and we try and stick to them as much as we can, so we give Becca the best chance of making her shots. And yeah, she's pretty open with our suggestions and stuff like that, but again, like, she's like, nope, I want to play this, and then you know, okay, she wants to play this, and that's the best sort of chance for her to make the shot.
Your team had a relatively good season, Jen, qualifying in 8 of 11 events and reaching the three finals without winning a title. How would you summarise your season?
Yeah, I feel like, considering obviously we've been rotating for most of the season, basically every competition we were probably in a slightly different role. I feel like it's been, as you said, a really good season. At the start of the year, we had a couple of absences and illnesses. So at the start of January, we weren't kind of our norm. But I think just now we've had a really good chunk of training the last couple of weeks. And I think we feel really good and sort of a lot more settled compared to just after Christmas. And I think we've got like a really strong vibe going into the event.
You were the top-ranked team at the Scottish Championship, said Jen, but lost four games, three of them to the eventual champions. Was it a case of Team Henderson getting on a roll and simply having your number that week, or were there some things that you had to work on after the event to make sure that you were hitting on all cylinders heading into the World Championships?
Yeah, I think you've pretty much hit the nail on the head. Yeah, like Team Henderson had a great week. You can see they've really came on over the course of this season, and they were really firing at the Scottish. So yeah, they kind of had our number on that, and we just weren't quite on our game, and we just weren't following our processes to the best of our abilities. So that's something we've been really concentrating on back here in the last couple of weeks. So yeah, obviously the Scottish is always, you're always going to have a challenge, and obviously we're the top ranked team, so everyone kind of is out there to beat you, and everyone's going to raise their game against you because they know they have to. So we had some really, really good games out there, and I think that's prepared us well for the Worlds.
How strange was it to see your Olympic skip Eve Muirhead on the bench as a coach for your opponents in that Scottish final?
Well, we always had a wee good chat before the game started and stuff like that. But it's when you're in the game, you don't really notice these things. Obviously, she's helped that team so much this year, and you can see that in the performances. So I think it's a great thing for Scottish and British curling to have Eve sort of still in the program and helping out, because already you can see the benefits she's bringing to that team.
The curling media and the larger curling community were very surprised about your team's selection to represent Scotland at the World Championships, even though you did not win Nationals. Can you confirm that the players had been advised ahead of time that the winners of the Scottish Nationals would not necessarily be the Scottish reps at the 2024 World Championships?
Yes, we were all clear on that. At the start of this quadrennial, a selection policy gets sent out to all the players, and it's made public as well. So you know the criteria that you have. It's required to go to like a Europeans or a World and an Olympic Championship. So going into it, you know the Scottish might not go. But again, even throughout the season, you know there's certain things, and certain things is required to represent your country at the world. So we all know the policy, and so yeah, it wasn't a huge surprise to us, because we kind of looked at the policy after the Scottish.
Scotland has not reached the podium at the World Women's Championship for 7 years, Jen. What will be the keys for your team to end that streak and earn a spot on the podium in Sydney, Nova Scotia?
Yeah, I think, as I said, we need to kind of probably get back to the form we were probably slightly earlier in the season. And again, I think the training in the last couple of weeks has really helped that. But I think we just have to stick to our processes. And I think that's a big thing for us. If we stick to our processes and get in a good flow, and obviously your confidence comes with you. So I think we just really need to stick to that. It's a long week, so you know, realistically, it's very, very hard to go undefeated in a long week like that, especially with the caliber of teams that are there. So you kind of almost need to ride the wave. If you do get a couple losses, you have to make sure you don't get too down on yourselves, because you know there's still going to be opportunities. The first objective is trying to get into the top six, and then it's basically a whole new competition from there. So yeah, the first objective is just obviously take a game at a time, and then hopefully we make the top six, and then it's a new competition, and hopefully we could go on from there and podium.
For sure, Jen. I guess if anybody would know how it doesn't really matter how you make it to the playoffs, but how you perform once you get there, it might be someone like you, given that you just barely reached the playoffs at the 2022 Olympics, yet went on to win gold. And let's not forget the fact that you just barely qualified for the Olympics in 2022 as well.
We didn't do it in the most straightforward of ways. Yeah. But that, again, that shows you, obviously, like in Calgary, we didn't even qualify GB a spot for the Olympics. But I think that kind of gave us a real sort of drive, because we know we want to represent. And I think it kind of gave us time to reflect as well. And we came back really a lot stronger. So in hindsight, it was almost a good thing for us, because we knew, okay, we really need to up our game. So yeah, it's always fun doing it the hard way, isn't it?
So Ross Patterson, who is a familiar face to people who follow the Grand Slam of Curling, is on your bench as coach of the season, Jen. What has it been like working with Ross as a coach?
Yeah, it's been great. Obviously, he brings a lot of experience as well, represented Scotland many times at Europeans and Worlds. So, yeah, he brings a lot of experience in that sense, but also, like, technically, he's really developed us as well. He's one of these people who really likes to look for the fine detail. So I think that's been really beneficial for us this season. I think that kind of showed at the early part of the season when we were really going up the rankings that what we were kind of working on with Ross has been really working. So yeah, I think we've got a really good bench. Obviously, Greg Drummond is our head coach, so he's going to be on the bench as well. So I think we've got a really, really good group of coaches going out with us.
And finally, Jen, one of the stories that made a lot of news late last season was the hiring of David Murdoch as the new director of high performance at Curling Canada. What was the reaction in Scotland when all of you first heard that David was headed to Canada?
Yeah, so it wasn't a huge surprise for us. Obviously, his wife's Canadian and stuff like that. So I think we always felt that he would want to kind of go over there at some point and live in Canada, obviously. His kids are still pretty young, so it's almost like a perfect opportunity for it. So, yeah, it wasn't a total surprise. Obviously, it was a slightly disappointment because, obviously, he'd had so much success with British curling. So, but I think we had the hiring of Greg has been a really good replacement and really seamless, and we've kind of continued on from what we've kind of been doing the last quadrennial and to this quadrennial with Greg.
Last but certainly not least, I am joined by Jess Smith, who will lead her team from New Zealand to a second consecutive world championship. The team will look to build on their experience from last year and are eager to earn that first ever victory for New Zealand in a game at the Women's Worlds. So Jess, you and I have not spoken since the week after the 2022 Pan Continental Championship, when your team qualified New Zealand for its first ever Women's World Curling Championship. Tell me about competing in your first Women's Worlds last year. What were your biggest takeaways?
It was it was a big experience for all of us. None of us had ever played at that level before. It was a big week mentally and physically, just with how many games we had to play as well. It was tough, probably just like having to go all the way over the other side of the world. Like, it's as far away as we could travel as possible. Whole different, a lot of things, sickness played into it as well. So yeah, it was a tough week, tough learning, but overall still a great experience. I was probably a little bit starstruck as well, but you kind of just realize that all the other teams and all the other curlers are just people like us, really. It was a good time. It was fun.
Now, you represented New Zealand at this year's Pan Continentals again, and going 2-5 this time compared to 4-4 a year ago. On the surface, it looks like you didn't do as well this season, but you still finished 5th and you qualified for Worlds. From a performance perspective, Jess, did you feel a progression from you and your team from one year to the next?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, at the Pan Continentals, we brought Courtney in as a new player, so that probably changed team dynamics a bit, and we're figuring things out as a team. And I mean, with the Pan Continentals being our one and only basically competition that we play in at that kind of level, because we're not in Canada and we don't play lots of high level teams all the time, so it just takes us a while to settle into playing at that level and with the strategy and just the focus that's needed. Taking that on board and with coming over a week early for the Worlds, so we're getting some good quality training time together, and we've got a couple of teams lined up to play against us. So hopefully we go into next week a bit more solid as a team unit.
Jess, because of distance and the fact that traveling to several events would be cost prohibitive for you and the team, the only event you have on your schedule this season other than the Pan Continentals and the Worlds is your National New Zealand Championship. Now, truth be told, there isn't much depth in New Zealand, so you end up playing teams that aren't at your level or at a level that you're going to have to compete at when you're at the World Championships. Now, I realize that it's a process and it might come someday, but is there a part of you that would like to have other teams that can push you in New Zealand, which would no doubt help you when you arrive at the Pan Continentals or at the World Championships?
Yeah, totally. So it's a little bit different in New Zealand. At the moment, each player is selected into the national, into the representative team.
Oh, okay.
So the way we used to do it is that we would kind of split the probably better players and make all the teams a bit more even, and try and have a sort of more even competition like that. But then when we started looking at our goals and where we wanted to be, we decided that we needed to play more as a team, and the only option to do that was to play at the Nationals together. So that's sort of why we dominate over the rest, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
And there just isn't many female curlers in New Zealand. It's a very minority sport. So, yeah, there just isn't the competition there that we need to get us there for playing at this level, if that makes sense.
You just mentioned the addition of Courtney Smith to the lineup, Jess. I don't believe she was with the team last year. So tell me about her addition to the lineup for this year's World Championship.
Yeah, Courtney is a great player. She plays mainly mixed doubles with Anton Hood. He's the skipper of the men's team. So she's been doing a lot of curling with the doubles. And, yeah, she's a great player. So for our Nationals, there isn't a lot of games and it's not really worth having an alternate. Like, they're better off playing in a team just to get game time. She skipped her own team, and then obviously through selection was selected with the rest of us into the team.
So what are the objectives for your team at the Worlds this year, Jess? Is it about winning a couple of games? Is it about progressing over last year? What are going to be the things that you're going to keep an eye on as a team to make sure that this particular World Championship in Sydney is viewed as a success for you and the team?
I think just that we gel together as a team, and that we do pull off a couple of wins, that would be really nice. But just knowing that we gave it our best and, just hopefully everything stars align and no one gets sick or injured or any of those things that we've had to battle with in the past. Just work well as a team and communicate and just have fun, really. Like, that's our main objective, is to enjoy the whole thing, because what's the point if you don't enjoy it?
So I've got to ask you, this is going to be the first time you play in a World Championship in Canada. How pumped are you and the team to play at a Worlds in Canada where the atmosphere can be electric?
Well, I know for sure that I'm excited. Playing in front of a big crowd, it's something I've never done before. But I think it'll be fun. I'm just excited to get there and get started and just experience everything. I think the rest of the team are excited too.
And finally, Jess, I've got to ask you, I mean, one of the interesting stories that has developed in curling in Canada this year is the fact that the New Zealand men's team, skipped by Anton Hood, moved to Canada to help prepare themselves for a run at the Olympics in 2026 and ended up getting room and board at a seniors' home in the Calgary area. I'm just wondering if that's made the news in New Zealand, if they've been a story in New Zealand because of not only the fact that he moved to Canada to practice the sport they love, but also the fact that they've sort of approached it in a different kind of way, and finding room and board in the retirement home is certainly not something that you would expect for the most part from athletes traveling to another country.
Yeah, it has. I mean, it got the attention first in Canada, obviously, and then they've been on our news channels a couple of times as well. So, yeah, it definitely made the national news, which was cool, which is good for the sport in New Zealand as well, just because it's not well known or well talked about. It's probably like rugby in Canada.
And that does it for our preview of the 2024 World Women's Curling Championship. A huge thank you to all of our guests for joining me. Also, don't forget to check out our partners and friends in the Curling Podcast Network, the Two Girls in the Game Podcast, the Rock Logic Podcast, and the Curling Legends Podcast. I'm Frank Rock, and you're listening to the From the Hack Curling Podcast, part of the Curling News and Sports Illustrated Partnership.